thousands of miles. Now, we know this is true because if you're with someone who drops underneath the story and the victim-perpetrator scenario into the genuine pain, you know, you feel an immediate love for that person. An immediate empathy, an immediate sense of sort of endless connection, because you and that person are suddenly now bonded in what we all know to be our common human condition. We hurt, we love. It's very hard to get there. R.D. Lang says that the way out is through the door. Why is it that so few people use this method? Isn't that great? And so now you have the door. We have the door. Question is, why is it so difficult to use this method? Pride is one major thing about it. That's what got the beautiful Lucifer in trouble in the first place. And we follow in his footsteps. It's hard to give that pride up. Okay, thank you for your attention. We will have some questions.
We have a question back here.
I'm struggling with innocence, and you talked about it a lot in your first talk also. Right. And innocence carries the spirituality. I want to have the spirituality, but innocence needs to be mediated by experience and needs to not get caught up in the infantile omnipotence.
Right.
So I'm struggling about, and then Marie-Louise von Franz says the Little Prince is a pathological book that shows his suicidal puer tendencies.
Oh, she does. And, I know. You're going to hear a very different analysis tomorrow. Thank you. You're struggling with all the same things that I've been struggling with. And, you know, it's amazing when you struggle with this and struggle with this and you're trying to write and finally something comes clear. Let me see if I can just run it through. Innocence is important because it carries the spark of divinity that we all carry, the light in us. That light, I'll tell you another story. We all start off in that light, then we forget it, or we lose it. We come down into this world and we fall asleep. That's the story in the wonderful Iranian tale of the Hymn of the Pearl. We lose that, our original state of the light. But we have these immortal longings. That's what Shakespeare said. We have these immortal longings that long to get back there, but we're asleep and we're embedded. We're down here. Here's a story. A three-year-old little girl. This is in Marcus Borg's The Heart of Christianity, if you want to look it up. She's been an only child for 3 years, and now she's about to have a baby brother. They know this because they've done amnio, and they've even named the little boy. And the little girl goes to her mother and father, and she says, "Now, when mommy comes home from the hospital, I want some private time with David." And the parents say, "Oh, really? Yes, I have a talk with him. I have to have a talk with him." So the parents are a little concerned about this because they know that this is going to be a major rupture in this little girl's continuity of life. But they realize also that they have an intercom right outside the door, And so they could be in there very rapidly if she tried to throttle this, the new baby or whatever. So they think that she'll just forget it. So the mother comes home from the hospital, and guess what? She doesn't forget it. She appears very rapidly, and she says, "When are you going to let me talk to David?" And so they arrange for a time, and they take her into the little room, and the parents are there, and they say, "Okay," and they close the door, and they can hear the little her little feet padding over to the crib where David is lying, and they listen very carefully to the internet, and they hear her little girl, their little girl, say to David, "Tell me about God. I've almost forgotten." What a beautiful story. "Tell me about God. I've almost forgotten." Well, we almost forget. You know, life, the world is too much with us, late and soon. Getting and spending, we lay waste our powers. You know that wonderful poem by Wordsworth. So we forget. And then the question becomes, how do we find our way back there? Well, innocence has to be mediated so that we come down into this world and into our adult lives with a remnant of that spark that's still with us, the memory of it, maybe a connection to it somehow. Maybe we have mystical experiences that renew that connection. Maybe we have mystical experiences in nature. Maybe we do with our lovers and partners and friends and so on. But we don't lose it altogether. We maintain what Edinger would call the ego-self axis. You know, he says that when we come into being, the self with a capital S in the Jungian language, which is the circumference and the center of the personality, the ego is identified with the self and is all inflated. You know, like the little prince on his planet, we're up there and floating around, and slowly the ego has to disidentify from the self, but not lose the connection to the self. And that disidentification, if it happens too fast, means trauma. And trauma means the space, transitional space, which keeps the axis open and keeps the transformation of innocence into experience going, is closed. Then innocence takes on a form that we don't want to think about. Christopher Bolas has a whole chapter in one of his books on malignant innocence. A good example of this are the people who are so identified with unborn life that they have no compunctions about killing abortion doctors with sniper rifles in the name of innocence. So you see innocence there paired with violence. Okay? And that's a problem. Because that's untransformed innocence that's been traumatized too soon and has taken on, because it's no longer got any communication with this world and with experience that's mediated, it grows all kinds of weird forms in the dark. And then you come to Helen Luke's point. If innocence has been trapped, locked up, sequestered in hell or on its planet, then suffering takes on a distorted form. And it's not until that innocent core of the self can allow itself to suffer again that we get transformative suffering. That's the point. Does that help at all? What's that?
Elaborate on the last two lines, how we do that suffering.
Well, how do we do that suffering authentically? First of all, we usually need a companion, like Dante had. And we usually have to go down into the pain of our earlier lives with that companion. And we have to make contact with the suffering child inside us that didn't understand what was happening to him or her and just suffered it and got hurt. And then we, in order to get to that child, we have to get through a thorn bush of stories, defensive stories, that try to protect that child in there from any kind of contact with the outer world. Because the representatives of that defensive structure don't trust our good intentions. And they have no reason to trust it. But every once in a while, something will happen. And sometimes we'll get a lot of help from something like Marsha Linehan experienced in the chapel. You know, and other times we'll find a way. I have some stories that I'll tell you tomorrow and the next day about moments where contact was made in therapy session with that child and where something happened. And then maybe it'll become clearer.
Yes. Question over here. I'm thinking of people who don't make it through.
Yeah.
And even though they try, certainly in the past, because even if you went into therapy, didn't mean it was going to be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many varieties of people who don't make it through and who suicide, one every 18 seconds in our country.
Right.
And just some conversation about suicide. I've had the experience in my family, and it's a puzzle because it's not, at least my mother's experience was not one of not trying, and even not, she was certainly in contact with her child self
mm-hmm.
at times, but treatment, I think, got in the way. So just what you're thinking about suicide.
Well, suicide is when dis wins, right? It can be a lot of things. I mean, it can be a person's effort to just simply end the repetitive cycle of pain that is so awful that the life force, the innocent core, has just never, has not been contacted for a long time, and the person has lost track of it, and nobody sees it anymore. But generally, yeah, I mean, we have to be careful we don't underrate the effectiveness of these defenses or just make them bad. Because these defenses help people keep people in being. They're survival defenses. Some people lead really important lives without ever getting home in the way that we're talking about here. Others end up suiciding, but there are people who never break through and get any help with the innocent part of them suffering, and yet they make huge contributions to our human culture, our human experience. So it's really important to recognize that. These defenses are in business to allow the personality to survive and to put that child in cold storage until such time may come along, it may not, that child can thaw out again. And and a more vital, animated, joyful life can proceed. Some people never get there. And, you know, we can't judge that, or all we can say is, for those of us in the helping professions, we want to put our shoulder against this wheel and try to help people who do want to change to really change. But the resistances that we encounter are huge, and they're for good reason. People have grown untrusting for very important reasons, and we can't talk them out of that. That's why sharing our own struggles, our own suffering, our own problems is so helpful with anybody who needs help.